although by the power of time I've arranged it in a different way, this truth you'll be able to see directly in your heart. Please understand that you are in Vrindavan and your Krishna is standing by your side. And that is the end of the drama. Actually, there are two other things that Radha and Krishna say, but basically that's the end of the drama. Thing is that Yoga Maya, this internal potency in her personal forms, she's very amazing to make arrangements for the pastimes of Krishna. Very amazing. So that we'll talk about a little bit in more detail when we come to some of the later verses. On the other hand, in her perverted form, she is Durga. So such an amazing person, such a powerful person. When she manifests as Durga, how are we going to get free from her? No chance. Any comments or questions? Exactly. That all the demons who Krishna kills are his devotees, who descend. Some of them are demons. Yeah, but somehow or other they get the special mercy of ending up being killed by Krishna. Yeah. So they go to the Brahma Jyoti, normally. Yeah. Question is, do the demons who descend to help Krishna's past in his pastimes by giving him a good fight, do they enjoy it? Is that? No. They get killed. I don't think many people enjoy getting killed. No, because they're in a demoniac frame of mind. When Jayan Vijay fell, see, they're the only two, really, who we know of, who fell in order to give Krishna a good fight. And when they fought with him, they were not thinking that, yes, here we are, Jayan Vijay, and we are devotees, but we're here to give Krishna a fight, so we better give him a good fight. No. They were thinking, here is this nonsense, you know, Krishna or Ram. Just like today is Ram Vijay Dasami. So Ravan, he enjoyed in the sense that he was a Kshatriya and he enjoyed fighting, but it wasn't a transcendental experience for him at all. He was fixed in a demoniac frame of mind. Yeah. Other Vishaka? Yes, well, you know that Bhishma is a devotee who's in that type of rasa, the ghastly rasa. I mean, partly he's in that. It's a part of his relationship with Krishna. So when he fights with Krishna, he enjoys it. And Krishna enjoys it. In fact, it's an exchange of love. In fact, the Bhagavatam describes that when Bhishma's arrows were hitting Krishna's body and causing wounds, Krishna took those to be like the so-called love bites of material so-called lovers. So there you go. Yeah. The point being made is that even though Radha and Krishna in the passage we read from Lalita Madhava, they're together, and wherever they are is Vrindavan. But still, Radharani is attracted to that Vrindavan, to that Gokul of Vrindavan. Yes, the same idea is there, and therefore the point is that that Vrindavan is very special or very powerful. So that point is there also in the meeting of Krishna with the inhabitants of Vrindavan at Kurukshetra, which is recorded in Chaitanya Charitamrita and in the Bhagavatam, but more in a more sort of explicit form in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Radharani is there with Krishna, but she's saying that it's very nice, it's very wonderful, but still I want to go back. And, you know, when Krishna was in Mathura, the inhabitants of Vrindavan could easily have left. You know, it's just down the road. You can walk there in a few hours. It's like a 3 or 4 hour walk. But they never did it. Because Vrindavan, which is a manifestation of Krishna, is so powerful that in one sense, even if Krishna is not there, they won't leave it. Yeah. Anyway, the basic point is that Vrindavan is very powerful and very, very special. Yeah. Kula. Yes. That's in Gokula. Well, you know, we don't hear a lot about the other 999 golden Yuga avatars. But the thing is, seeing their incarnations of Vishnu, they're not really in a position to give anything more than that. That's why Lord Chaitanya is referred to by Rupa Goswami as Namo Mahavanyaya, Krishna Prema Pradayate. Yes, he is very special, most munificent avatar, because he's giving Krishna Prema, not Vishnu Prema. Yeah. So there is this difference then with the others. They're basically giving Vishnu Prema. Well, see, even if they were chanting Hare Krishna, it would be in a Vaikuntha type of context. Because there is a Vaikuntha planet where there is Radha and Krishna, but they're Vaikuntha, they're Narayan, they're Lakshmi and Narayan, and they're worshipped in awe and reverence. Yeah. Yeah. Any last question? Yeah. Yogamaya, the person of Yogamaya potency. In Vrindavan is known as Purnamasi. In Dwaraka, she's known as Subhadra. Yeah. Or Ekanamsa. But generally, she's known as Subhadra. Okay, we'll end here. Let's see now. You should go on and read. Now, we're going into the description of the creation. I think read 7, 8, and 9. Okay. The Prabhupada Keda. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Could one of you just take this, please? Thank you. Of Brahma Samhita, according to our overview book, there is going to be a change of subject from the description of Gokula and the abode of the Lord, the yantra, the mantra. So now we're going to go into the discussion about the process of creation from Mahavishnu. It is, I would say, somewhat easier to digest than the first section, which generally people don't find easy. Although having said that, it is quite deep, certainly quite deep. So let us see how we go, but I think really we'll find it quite a bit easier than the previous section to do with the yantra particularly. Okay, so let us... Actually, the part that we're going to read is... In fact, if you look in your overview books, we haven't really been referring to the overview book very much, but this section... Section B runs from text 7 to text 21. We've entitled it The Material Creation. And the first part of it is verse 7 to verse 10, actually. Yesterday we said to read verses 7, 8, and 9, but, well, we'll see how time allows things today. But perhaps we'll try and get through from verse 7 to verse 10. Let us read. Let us start by reading verse 7, the Sanskrit from Brahma Samhita. Mayaya Ramamanasya Navi Yogas Tayasaha Atmana Ramaya Reme Tyakta Kalam Sisrikshaya. Translation: Krishna never consorts with his illusory energy. Still, her connection is not entirely cut off from the absolute truth. When he intends to create the material world, the amorous pastime in which he engages by consorting with his own spiritual chit potency, Rama, by casting his glance at the deluding energy in the shape of sending his time energy, is an auxiliary activity. Is that okay? It's a little difficult to follow, but it's actually not that hard when you really think about it. We were reading yesterday how Krishna has one spiritual potency. That is his internal energy, spiritual energy, yoga maya energy, which works by arranging all the pastimes in the spiritual world, and for the neophyte devotees, or those devotees who are not perfect at least, then it gives protection, gives shelter. Mahatma nastu mam parta, daivim prakritim ashrita. The great souls, the devotees, are under the protection of the divine energy, that's that internal spiritual potency, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. However, that same energy is pervertedly manifest in the material world. In the spiritual world, it's yoga maya. In the material world, it's maha maya. Maya means illusion, and maha means great. It's the place of that great illusion, where people, what to speak of not understanding their relationship with Krishna. They don't even understand themselves. They're simply lost in the material world. Just completely covered over by that perverted external energy. Durga covers the eyes of the conditioned souls. But then by her grace, in her original form, then when the conditioned souls try to become devotees, then she uncovers their eyes. She covered them. She can also uncover them. So that we talked about a little bit at the end yesterday. And here, Lord Brahma is saying that Krishna doesn't really have anything to do with the material nature. He's there in the spiritual world, enjoying his pastimes. So what does he have to do with the material energy, which is simply full of misery, everything is temporary, all the people, all the living entities within the material world, they generally don't want to know about Krishna. So why should Krishna bother? And he doesn't, usually. He just lets them carry on attempting to enjoy independently. However, Lord Brahma, having made that point, says in the verse that still there is a connection. This is part of Achintya Bhed Abhed Tattva in Krishna consciousness. Everything is part of Achintya Bhed Abhed Tattva. from the beginning to the end. I guess everyone marked themselves present, understanding that we're part and parcel of Krishna, but it's not all one. Right from that point of understanding that I'm spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna, but I'm an individual spirit soul. From that point, right up to the top, understanding Srimati Radharani. She is part of Krishna. She is his internal pleasure potency, but she's an individual. So on all levels, from the beginning to the end, this principle of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva applies. Oneness and difference. And here also, the external energy. Krishna doesn't really deal with it. He has no interest, but still he deals with it. And the way in which he deals with it is mentioned here in this verse, text 7, that when he wants to create, then the amorous pastime, what does this mean? This means his eternal conjugal relationship with Srimati Radharani, ultimately, actually. But in this specific case, we're talking about Mahavishnu, who's an expansion of Krishna. And his consort in this regard is Rama. She is an expansion of Srimati Radharani. As Krishna expands in different forms, Srimati Radharani expands also in different forms, which are always appropriate, taking into consideration the particular form that Krishna has expanded into. So Mahavishnu is an expansion of Krishna, and the appropriate expansion of Srimati Radharani, she's known as Rama. And she is a form of the goddess of fortune specifically, but of course the goddess of fortune is simply an expanded form of Radharani. So when Mahavishnu wants to create, then that amorous pastime, his conjugal relationship with Rama, the verse says it's an auxiliary activity, means it's like the basis or the prototype upon which his exchange with the external energy is based. Yes, and that of course is going to be explained, how he glances at the external energy. That's in the next verse actually. And that glance is not just a glance. When we glance here and there, then our glance is not a person. Our glance is just some sort of glance here and there. Then our glance is not a person. Our glance is just some sort of sensory function. But when Mahavishnu glances, that glance is a person. And that person is a fairly original form of Lord Shiva. So this is all based, this relationship, this interacting with the material nature in the creative process through the agency of the glance, which is this form of Lord Shiva. This whole thing that goes on in that regard is based on the conjugal relationship which exists between Mahavishnu and Rama, or ultimately between Lord Krishna and Srimati Radharani. So, it's explained more in text 8, but for the time being, regarding the description given here in text 7 and the purport of text 7. Actually, perhaps I could just read one verse and purport from Srimad Bhagavatam, which is talking about precisely this, but in a little more detail. So this is now Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 5, Verse 24. The translation is, "The Lord, the undisputed proprietor of everything, was the only seer. The cosmic manifestation was not present at that time, and thus he felt imperfect, without his plenary, and separated parts and parcels. The material energy was dormant, whereas the internal potency was manifested." So that is the description. Same situation, basically. Mahavishnu was the only seer, the only active person at the time. I mean, he... Obviously, this is not including within Goloka Vrindavan or Vaikuntha, because they are on the other side of the Viraja River. Mahavishnu is reclining on what we sometimes call the causal ocean, but more specifically, perhaps, it's known as the Viraja River. And we already read a little bit about it. It separates the spiritual kingdom from the material kingdom. So, when this verse says he was the only seer, does not mean including in the spiritual realm. It means from the Viraja River going down into the material realm. When we look at that part of the creation, then at this point, Mahavishnu was the only seer. The cosmic manifestation was not present. The basic energy, the verse says, was present. The material energy was present, but it was not manifest. The universes were not there with the various species of life, planetary systems, and all that. It was... This material energy in the unmanifest form is called pradhan. Pradhan. And that means all the ingredients which make up all the material ingredients, not the living, not the jivas, but all the material ingredients which make up the material world, they're just all mixed up together. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, the three modes of material nature, mind, intelligence, false ego, the senses, the sensory functions, all these basic elements, the building blocks of life within this material world, they were just mixed up together. And you couldn't see that here is some earth, whereas over here is some water, and over on that side is some fire. You couldn't see like that. This is, we sometimes say, something like what the scientists imagine to be the primordial soup. You know, when you make a soup, you may take a number of ingredients, a few different types of vegetables, some water, some spices, some salt, and you cook it up. And if you really cook it up, you know, they're different soups, but if you really, you know, just cook it and cook it and cook it and cook it and cook it, after a while you won't be able to recognize that there is some cauliflower, but here is a potato. You won't be able to see that. It all just become all mushed up together, basically. Yeah. So, the material energy, when it's in this unmanifest or pradhan state. It's like the raw state of material energy. Everything is mixed up like that, and you cannot see what is what. You follow the idea? Yeah. So, he was the only seer. The cosmic manifestation was not present. The material energy was there, but it was dormant, whereas the internal potency was manifested. This means Rama. She was there with Mahavishnu, of course, in his abode, which is in the Viraja River. So the internal potency was manifest, but the material energy was dormant and in a sort of non-specific state. And now this is really the crucial point when it comes to why. Why the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though, as the verse, the text number 7 says in Brahma Samhita, he never consorts with his illusory energy. So even though that may be there, but still he has some dealings. Now there's a very crucial reason why, and we should understand that, among other things, for the test. Let me read Srila Prabhupada's... Well, what he says, what the Bhagavatam says, is that he felt imperfect without his plenary and separated parts and parcels. This is the Bhagavatam verse. So he felt there was something lacking because all the jivas, all the living entities were dormant. So he felt a lack. So let me just read the purport here by Srila Prabhupada. This is 3.5.24. 3.5.24. Srila Prabhupada says, "The Lord is the supreme seer because only by his glance did the material energy become active for cosmic manifestation. At that time the seer was there, but the external energy over which the glance of the Lord is cast was not present." I mean, it was present, but it wasn't manifest. "He felt somewhat insufficient, like a husband feeling lonely in the absence of his wife." This is a poetic simile. Yes. "The Lord wanted to create the cosmic manifestation to give another chance to the conditioned souls who were dormant in forgetfulness. The cosmic manifestation gives the conditioned souls a chance to go back home, back to Godhead. And that is its main purpose." This is why. "The Lord is so kind that in the absence of such a manifestation, he feels something wanting. And thus the creation takes place. Although the creation of the internal potency was manifested, the other potency appeared to be sleeping." Material energy was dormant. "And the Lord wanted to awaken her to activity, just as a husband wants to awaken his wife from the sleeping state for enjoyment. It is the compassion of the Lord for the sleeping energy that he wants to see her awaken for enjoyment, like the other wives who are awake. The whole process is to enliven the sleeping conditioned souls to the real life of spiritual consciousness, so that they may thus become as perfect as the ever-liberated souls in the Vaikuntha lokas." So here in the purport, it's very clear. Just as Lord Brahma in the verse is invoking this conjugal image of how the Lord's interacting with the material energy is related with his interacting with his eternal consort Rama, or Krishna with Radharani, like this. So Srila Prabhupada is invoking that same conjugal type of sort of image in this purport here, in Srimad Bhagavatam. Similar idea. So this, the Lord then, the verse says, he glances. And this glance, there is something within this glance which is really the first factor when it comes to waking up the wife or stimulating, you know, invigorating that material energy. It's the first step, not the last step.